The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek and they met it with a bat. Fucking protesting them cities. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around and pump crack right up in your city. And they just turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your garden. Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines that are called USA Inc. Today's date is November the 9th, 2015. It is a Monday afternoon. And it is a lot to talk about here recently in the news about racism and white supremacy, whether it is institutional racism and white supremacy, meaning that powerful white supremacists, more refined white supremacists, you can't always tell that they got white supremacist beliefs, but, you know, they are like presidents of major universities that have a long history of racism and white supremacy. They may be like Harvard, which has profited from the institution of slavery, and many of them still profiting through modern slavery, through the private prison stocks and whatnot. But that's what I that's how I define institutional racism, where you have institutions that are supported by either tax dollars or, you know, I'm paying money to go somewhere and I'm supposed to be a part of that community. But, you know, you got white supremacist beliefs and it expresses itself not so much all the time through policy, but by being tolerable of racism and white supremacy and how it expresses itself through the social terrorism, because that's what it is. And so got to talk about that, even though when I put together today's profile for today's program, I did not plan on discussing Missouri University players standing up for their self-respect and saying that they are not tolerant of racist-based terrorism in social situations. But I have to because some major moves is being made there. And there's just so much propaganda media out there that's trying to discourage these kids. I shouldn't call them kids, but young people, because this is an expression. These student athletes and the black student who started the hunger strike, which started it all. They have forced some change in that community, because if you're going to live in a community, then you should take responsibility for that community. And as because of institutional racism, you see that you have to make white people address racism and white supremacy. Yes, it is true to a aspect that since they in control of the system, they're the only ones that can, or they're the dominant population, they're the only ones that can actually end racism and white supremacy. But you can't sit around and think that they're just going to take the initiative and you know go and do something about racism, white supremacy. No, you have to force them, you have to coerce them, you have to manipulate them, whatever tactic, you know, appeal to their humanity, all of that, whatever tactic to convince them to take action against racism and white supremacy, you do that. And in this case, economics was used. A lot of people don't see those players threatening to boycott and not play football because they thought there were more important things than playing football and making lots of money for white people. They decided that they was going to stand in solidarity with the other students and say, we are not going to tolerate this. So then, therefore, you had other white people join in, and there some, you know, we can only speculate about what their individual reasons was, but the coach, for example, you know, he was motivated to, he was kind of put on the spot and forced to address it and stand with the players, because then you could just forget about, you know, his tenure as a football coach there. Maybe 10 years down the road, he might can make a comeback. But I mean, people have a heightened perception of racism today in society. And so how's he going to recruit black players to have black self-respect or just self-respect for themselves as human beings? You know, how's he going to recruit football players if he can't recruit black football players, which, you know, are the major participants in sports? And so if he can't recruit them and he can't make no money for the university, does he gonna lose his job? Because nobody wants to play for a loser. Well, also nobody wants to play for a racist. And when you force people out in the open to take a stand either way, it doesn't matter what they really feel in their heart and changing their heart, but you're using economic leverage, you're using social shaming leverage to force them to take a position. Now y'all can, they could have, it could have went the other way, in Missouri could have dragged it out. The people that are most in charge of Missouri as refined racist white supremacists, behind the scenes, they, you know, they wouldn't have said nothing to the president. You know, the president wasn't forced to resign because, you know, he felt contrite or anything like that. You know, he was like, I really blew this and whatnot, so I'm just going to resign, you know, in dignity or whatnot. No, powerful, refined, racist white supremacists that make a lot of money off of these student athletes, you know, had a private conversation and you got to go. None of that would not have happened without the actions of the black people forcing white people, using whatever tools they have at their disposal to force white people to end a practice of racism and white supremacy. It's just a battle in a long war. The war ain't over, you know. And so I guess we got to convince more white people to act against racism and white supremacy or we won't participate. See? Takes two, right? Takes two to tango. It takes two to, you know, dance or whatever. So if people start saying, I'm not going to participate, even though I could classify everyone as a proxy racist, but there are certain degrees to other D. No, everybody ain't a proxy racist, but they can be used as a proxy racist tool without their knowing that they're being used. And so these young people just have, and sports athletes just have a heightened sense of responsibility of showing self black respect. And because if you don't have a respect for self, then who else gonna respect you? You know what I'm saying? What are you gonna tolerate? Why would you tolerate a bully? Why would you tolerate somebody like these nasty? And I know this is, I try to keep it clean on this show, but these were some nasty MFs. You know what I'm saying? To take some human feces and scrawl a swastika on a wall. You know, these are acts of terrorism. Taking cotton balls and throwing them all over the workspace of a black coach, that's social acts of terrorism. It's meant to intimidate. It's a form of violence. It's a form of nonviolent violence is what it is. It's mental violence. It's psychological violence. It's terrorism. And then, you know, like people supposed to tolerate that. And then, you know, the victim blamers out there, and you know, there are many of them from the social commentator on just posting a comment on a social media posting, or whether it is a paid propaganda, white supremacist propaganda pundit, whether it's a proxy racist like Don Lemon, or whether it is a racist and you know, people like Bill O'Reilly, what's the dude named Sean Hannity, or the ones that's in control of the operation, Roger Ailes, Rupert Murdoch, and then that Saudi prince or whatnot. They practicing, you know, they practice racism through the Fox so-called news network. And so they use little mental tricks on the public to create a perception that, oh, these victims are just being childish. You know, children get offended. I heard somebody on the cow say that, you know, is that if you look at the study of their word usage, it's like, you know, children, you know, get offended. Like, you know, and it's like you're childlike. It's like, and then as I look back through my studies of all type of media and history, whether it was the printing press, whether it was when radio was invented, television, mass, what we call mass media today, but just when they just drew cartoons and things of that nature, you know, there's a pattern of showing black people, African descended people, Africans, or any non-white people. There's a tendency to draw them as, you know, childlike, or have them, you know, expressing like the mental capacity of a child. You know, I'm thinking about Django when, what's that actor's name? I can't think of Leonardo DiCaprio. Mr. Candy, you know, when he had the skull of the old Negro Joe, and, you know, doing what's called phrenology and study of the bumps and the stuff in the skull to say that, you know, why wouldn't old Joe just cut the throat of Massa, you know, and while he was giving Massa a shave, you know. So they believe that, oh, because they have a childlike mentality, they're not like regular human beings. They, you know, that's why they deserve slavery and mistreatment and to be terrorizing them, you know. But, you know, and then there are some white people that say they aren't tolerant of racism, but, I mean, they go harder for animal rights than they do against racism and white supremacy. You know, it's like they totally apathetic, ambivalent, whatever word you want to use to describe their non-willingness to take action. So, but they use words like offended. Oh, these people are, you know, they are so sensitive and they shouldn't be offended. And then you even got other black people. You know, they usually subscribe to a political philosophy called conservatism or whatnot, or they trying to be down with the Tea Party folks or whoever it is, whatever group is out there that, you know, they trying to get in with. You know, they will even accuse other black people of being childlike and offended, and you know, this is, they'll use the talking words. This is politically incorrect. You know, what's up with all this PC? First Amendment, that, you know, people should be able to express themselves. No, you don't get to express yourself with a swastika written in human feces in a community, in a public community area, whether it's public or private. University, everybody that's there was either given a scholarship because they was going to bring in 10 times the amount, probably 100 times the amount of money that it would have cost, they would have gotten from that person if they just paid to go. So, you know, or if you paid to go, well, I'm sure there are people, black people not on scholarship, you know, they go to these schools, and then there are white people who may not want to support that institutionally or what, and they're so-called offended. But that word, those words, they are kind of you know, I'm seeing through history, study of media history, mass media history, is that that's a way that they try to show, you know, practice racism through media. These are little children and don't pay attention to them. You know how little children throw tantrums and you know, little fits and whatnot. You know, don't pay, move right along. They shouldn't be getting offended because we want to wave terrorist flags and you know, just practice verbal terrorism along with visual terrorism against them. You know, these are acts of violence, people. But it's awful funny. They accuse the victims of being childlike, but then they'll also they'll try to minimize the responsibility of the terrorists in, because of their age. And, you know, if it's a white supremacist student that's on the down low or whatnot, or he's found a group and he feels safe to express that publicly or terrorize people, you know. That, I mean, these people, man, I'm telling you, I'm sorry, but let me, before I jump ahead of myself, open up the phone lines and people, in case people have any thoughts on this. And so I think it's a win. It's a battlefield win for those black student athletes to stand up, show some black self-respect, show that you're making billions, collectively billions of dollars annually off of our bodies. So that's telling me I'm worth something. So my voice matters, because if I stand collectively with others, with the dominant people, the dominant, let's say the majority of the people that is on that basketball court or on that football court or on that baseball field or wherever it is that you derive in all these millions. If we collectively is worth this much money, well, if the majority of us decide that we're not going to tolerate racism and white supremacy, we're not going to passively stand by and be terrorized and allow you to portray us as children, because we're not offended. Because I don't get offended, but again, before I get ahead of myself, I do have some breaking news, at least breaking from my perspective, because I'm not seeing the mainstream media making connections to Hillary Clinton and that bombing of that Russian plane, whether it was bombed, whether it was shot out at the sky. Marco Rubio shares some information. He sits on the Foreign Intelligence Committee, so I don't know if this information was classified or how it was classified, but to me it was a valuable piece of information, not because of so much as the context of how he's saying it, but just that it confirms that the United States, through the Obama administration, through the executive branch, with cooperation, I have to ask from the Foreign Intelligence Committee to overthrow Libya. All right. And now he's publicly making a connection to ISIS in Libya and saying Libya is just as bad as Iraq. And, you know, if you hadn't illegally overthrown, this country, and see, that's not what he's saying. That's what I've been saying, and others have been saying. So I'm linking this. I see a direct line pointing right back to Hillary Clinton, and I would give it more to her more so than to President Obama. Although, since he want to be the CEO, the buck stops at his desk. He has to take responsibility for it too. But Hillary Clinton was on lead on that. And I don't know if he, you know, just allowed, or his aides or whatever, his assistants just allowed Hillary Clinton to just run the State Department off by herself, like she running, you know, her own little presidency, because it was just a resume builder for her anyway, just like her running for senator, becoming a New York senator, you know, the New York senator, the former first lady, and then the former first lady of Arkansas, but also a lawyer, been in long political history, used to be a Republican. I believe that she's more responsible than anyone else for the bombing, if the reports are true, if the intelligence that's being disseminated through corporate media and other media sources is true, if what Marco Rubio, so we could say the U.S. Senate Foreign Intelligence Committee, whatever the acronym or name of it is, if what they're saying is true, that can be laid at the feet of Hillary Clinton, which just, you know, for those people that are operating and proposing activity in the nine areas of people activity, number six, politics, you know, this is major news, you know what I'm saying? And so why is the corporate media ignoring this? Why aren't any of these political pundits, so-called reporters, so-called news producers behind the scenes putting the program together and writing down the questions that Don Lemon, a proxy racist tool of white supremacy, is going to ask? You know, why aren't they asking these questions? You know, so I think they're trying to install Hillary Clinton as the next CEO, or at least give her a chance against whoever the so-called other side, the Republicans, put up. So, you know, it's just how people's public perception, whether it's their racist perceptions about black people or whether it's perceptions about political figures, mass media is a dangerous, dangerous tool. Because it controls the consciousness of the masses. And this has been pointed out by many, many times throughout history, through many different academic studies, through people who work in the either advertisement industry, radio industry, mass communication industry. Because it goes back to what? Probably the 1930s or something, when, you know. Because they had radio during World War II. They always, they had film back then. All that propaganda from the Nazis to demonize gypsies and communists and Afro-Germans and disabled people and Jewish people and gypsies and whatnot. You know, that was all done through the mass media. All throughout history, they have used this to justify slavery. They still use it today. And so now they're trying to convince you that Hillary Clinton is in a war criminal and in the very least just very incompetent. Nothing follows her but disaster. Her political career, I mean, what good can you really tell me about that outweighs the bad policy? Let's look at it in terms of policy. What good policies has she proposed or pushed through, turned into legislation, or signed on to that outweighs, you know, the mass incarceration, the zero tolerance in school, the framework, laying the groundwork for the private prison slavery? There's not enough anything that you could say to me. You can't say to me and expect me to take you serious if you say, well, it's time for a first female president or first woman president. That's, you know, really? You think that's making advances for women? Well, I would point you to any other black women and girls who have been abused through policies brought about, pushed, co-signed on to by people like Hillary Clinton. So, but this is big though, man, because this is like, they were just talking all this junk about Putin in the debates and whatnot, and through mass media shaping perceptions and whatnot, talking about what they would do to confront Putin. Putin is confronting you and your proxies, you know what I'm saying? I mean, and then we wonder why people are so misinformed. It's because of the media you consume, and then you don't ask questions about what you do consume. You don't analyze it. Got some proxy racist news also to talk about today. In case you haven't heard about the new website that was launched through the Black Talk Media Project, proxyracism.com. Go, you know about it now. Go check it out. But we have some proxy racist stories to share with you. Congress Congressman John Lewis. Now, I haven't turned this one. I haven't written about this, but I'm going to talk about it today because sometimes, you know, I write little articles, but I haven't refined them or whatnot. And then next thing you know, I just use that as, you know, to talk about as a topic on one of the programs. But I'm going to have to document this and explain a little further than me just telling you that Congressman John Lewis is turning out to be one of the most butter biscuit eatingest proxy racist tools of the Hillary zero tolerance Clinton campaign. I mean, I don't know if y'all saw the news last week of all of these family members, mostly mothers and fathers. Mothers and fathers of dead black children, either killed by police or white vigilante terrorists or a wannabe white vigilante terrorist. But anyway, they met with Hillary Clinton. I think it was in Chicago. I'm not sure. I'll pull up the details on that. But John Lewis is the one that's engineering this all behind the scenes and all of this meeting with the victim families. I mean, it's a slick political campaign where you use imagery and symbols and whatnot. He's a civil rights symbol, so, you know, Hillary Clinton must not be racist because John Lewis wouldn't be standing there with his arm around her and ushering her in to, you know, escorting her around the black community and introducing her, you know, to a gathering of the victims' families. And you know, she don't even have to come out with no policy. She ain't even had to debate nobody about policies because the debate's been fake on both sides and ain't been no real questions asked. But you know, he should know all of this. You know, unless he is suffering from brain damage, which is a strong possibility, considering all them kicks to the head and billy clubs to the head and possibly even horses' hooves to the head. And that can take a toll on people. We know what, you know, playing football can do to a person later on in life. So I don't know if they're using him as a prop and he's, you know, but he's being used as a proxy, too. But I've heard him speak sometimes, and I wouldn't say that he has brain damage or whatnot. I just think that he's, you know, when Dr. King, like somebody had said to me on social media, when Dr. King got killed, a lot of these civil rights figures cashed in. They was like, okay, maybe I better back off the white man a little bit, because they killed Dr. King. They killed Malcolm, and even got other black people to do it. So, yeah, let me chill out and I'll just get a teaching position somewhere. I'll go on lectures. I'll even run for office. And I will, you know, pretty much symbolically, the white media showcase me whenever they talk about voting rights or whenever, you know, there's a racial issue. And I will give the refined white supremacist approved Democratic response, since that's the program that I'm subscribed to. That's the white supremacist political party that I'm subscribed to. I'm a Democrat, so I take, you know, my talking points from them. And so, I understand it. That's a form of coercion. You're scared. You've been literally threatened. You know, as assassinations isn't just, you know, the assassination of an individual, but it is also a threat to everybody who identified with that victim. So I understand why some people shrink back from that. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, they not soldiers. You know, they not finna get in the trenches. The trenches ain't for everybody. Exposing yourself to enemy gunfire to make gains on the battlefield, everybody ain't got that kind of courage. They too afraid of dying. And so, you know, if I can cash in and I could just live comfortably on the plantation, then I'm all willing to find to go along with the pro. I think that's what's going on with John Lewis. And there is an article I did write on proxyracism.com about no sacred cows. Because, see, some people got, just a few, got real offended. How dare you talk about John Lewis? You know how many times that man got hit in the head for you? You know what I'm saying? You know, they just like, that's what's called a sacred cow. And that word or that term comes from the fact that you got Hindus in India that they don't eat meat. They don't eat beef. The cows represent, you know, a spiritual being for them. It might be their ancestor in that cow or something like that. I'm not sure of the details, but that's where the term sacred cows come from. You know, there are no sacred cows. You can't, if there are some things that you are going to hold off limits to yourself. Let's think again on the battlefield. No area of the battlefield is off limits. All right, if we got traitors in the squad or in the ranks and we find out that the reason we losing so many men when we go out in the field, you know, to look for the enemy, and he know exactly where we going to be, and then we lose all of these people because somebody among us is feeding the enemy, stuff like that, you know what I'm saying? That has to be addressed. It ain't no sacred cows. That ain't how white supremacists in their military operations operate. They don't tolerate that. They will tolerate some Israelis stealing secrets and stuff like that. They'll put them in prison, but, you know, they usually get out before their old men dying from cancer, and they're usually well-treated. They don't look like they've been victimized or anything when they get out, you know, and they go to their, you know, Zionist home state or whatnot. But for the most part, you know, they don't play that, man. They don't play that treason. Now, there's a lot of corruption, though, you know, at those levels. So, yeah, that's the way I look at a proxy racist. If we're talking about the battlefield or the war against racism, white supremacy as a global system, then, you know, that's how I look at proxy racists. How can I win when you working against you working for the enemy, so to speak? Whether, you know, you getting butter biscuits or K rations or whatever extra or however they rewarding you. You have betrayed your oath, you know, because you have to. It ain't no riding the fence. It ain't no. And, you know, I got to write again about my local NAACP chapter. President, it ain't no trying to tell black people this black and white labels, that's what's dividing us. No, that ain't what's dividing us. Well, no, it's white people classified as white want to practice social terrorism and institutional terrorism and just all forms of terrorism expressing itself under the label of racism. So that's one of the things we could talk about. Well, actually, I did put that on here. I put that on here to talk about because the NAACP in Oklahoma is definitely calling these white supremacists out and saying y'all foul for putting an all-white jury together for this former slave catcher, this cop, Daniel Holdsclaw is his name, who raped and targeted all these black women. Just as this, he was a slave catcher back in the 1800s or the 1700s or the late 1600s, wearing that badge and whatnot, and using that to prey upon free black women and enslaved Africans on the road as they went. Ain't none of this new, man. This ain't none of this new. And just like as if they was in the 1800s, where black people were, there were little codes and whatnot to exclude them from juries, and they still doing it today. They just refined the code a little bit. But in practice, you know, and it's manifesting itself in Oklahoma with an all-white jury. So the NAACP of Oklahoma took a stand and just called it what it is. This is racism, white supremacy. You know, there are a certain number of non-white people. We got Cherokee Indians here. We got black people here. We got, you know, we may even have some Hispanic people here. How you come up with an all-white jury? It is not reflecting the community. So that makes people question if the fix is in. And then, so imagine my frustration when my, and when I say my, I just mean local to me. I'm not in the NAACP. I don't pay dues to them. I don't even know how large the Gaston County chapter of the NAACP is, as it, you know, you never see them do anything publicly. So when they're on Facebook, on their Facebook page, and they're sharing videos by this other confused victim of racism, talking about black and white, we need to get rid of those labels and make black people ashamed to call themselves black, or to even have the audacity to tell people how they should classify themselves. I mean, they have a right to self-determination. We chose that name black. Large numbers, I would say, the majority of people call themselves black. So, you know, maybe you don't want, out there even black people who don't want to classify themselves as black behind these enemy lines of USA Inc. So they have their right to call themselves whatever they want to say. But the system of racism and white supremacy calls you black. You chose to be black. We used to call you niggas. We used to call you Negroes. We had a checkbox also for mulatto and that kind of stuff. And we even got a box for that today. But we have one thing in common, melanation. So, yeah, for him to try to put that out in a racist, racist county that I live in, where they have rallies with terrorist flags and got a monument to terrorists at polling places and at the courthouse, which, again, this man chose to ignore, because, again, I understand it's, you know, why some people don't want to make any gains on the battlefield, because they don't want to expose themselves to enemy fire. So then if you're not that type of person, if you're not a soldier, if you're not in this to win it, as they say, then you need to step down. You need to step aside and allow someone else to lead. So, I mean, it was only recently I found out there was an NAACP chapter. And I say recent, I mean past 4 or 5 years. The last chapter president, which was a different guy, he, you know, I interviewed him years ago over the killing of a black person in Dallas, North Carolina, not far from here, still in Gaston County, where the man, they said, struggled with two white cops, and one of them ended up shot him through the back while they wrestling on the ground. And then he's in the media telling the media, well, most people don't even know that I'm the Gaston County NAACP chapter president. Well, why don't they know? Why don't your neighbors that live right across the street, and how close, to bring it how close and local it is for me, my girlfriend, best friend that lived next door, it was between her property and the place where the man lived that got shot, his family lived that got shot. And you know, when I was a teenager, whatnot, and young person, well, I'm not going to go that far. He might not have been the president. But my point is, why didn't we know? Why didn't your own neighbors know? Because you ain't doing, you know what, nothing. You ain't doing nothing. You ain't trying to confront these people. You ain't trying to make, you just trying to hold steady. And that ain't the history of resistance in this place. Whether you want to call it Gaston County, Cleveland County, Lincoln County, which they have shown some self-respect. But all of this area has had many names, but, you know, it was Tryon County, and they split it into those three counties. And you probably don't know that because you don't know the history of the land where you live. But there has always been resistance. People don't tolerate it. Even when the Confederacy or some of these po-white families sent soldiers to the Confederacy to be recruits in a Confederate army and whatnot, all of the whole county was not Confederate. Y'all just sent them fools off to die. Them racist white supremacist poor people trying to get rich off the back of an enslaved African. I hope you died a miserable death. But yeah, the whole county wasn't like that. There was also pro-union support right here. So see, you just trying to be in a holding pattern is how I feel like some of these people are doing. Long as black people ain't getting lynched, as long as black will take disrespect, they can put feces on the wall in the form of a Nazi swastika, and you know, we not gonna get offended. We'll just clean it off and whatnot. Anyway, let me quit running on. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. The telephone number, if you have any question or comments, and I will be reading Marco Rubio's statement to the press. Might even play a video to show you how the mainstream media called CNN ain't covering it and ain't asking the right questions. But Marco Rubio made some statements that if you knew what he was talking about, if you knew the history, the recent history of how Libya became such a terrorist training ground and hotbed or bastion or whatever, you know, you would know what he's talking about, because he doesn't really tell you, because the Republicans ain't even attacking Hillary Clinton on it. Neither is none of her Democratic opponents attacking, neither are any of the moderators, not Rachel Maddow, not nobody else, have asked Hillary Clinton, do you think now it was a good decision to overthrow Libya? I mean, you got the same scenario how they played, you know, Bush on Iraq and Cheney on Iraq. You got Obama and Clinton on the decision to go into Libya and overthrow it. Now look at it. Look at it now. Look at what you've done, and now they've blown this Russian skyliner out the sky. Nobody's asking the right questions when the doggone puzzles, you know, pieces is all right there. All you got to do is put them together, but y'all supposed to be the professionals. Y'all the ones that's making the six figures a year and getting all kind of other butter biscuits. Got these degrees and doctorates and PhDs in communications and why aren't y'all asking these questions? So, but you can respond or ask questions of your own by giving us a call at 641-715-3660. Participant code 549-032 pound. Let me give it out once again, 641-715-3660. And the participant code is, as Dave would say, 549032. Pound, hit *61 to comment on air. You can also use the web-based flash phone. As long as you got a pair of headsets, and you know, those headsets got a microphone on it, you can use that. Call from anywhere in the world. Because indeed, racism and white supremacy is a global system that is needs to be destroyed. We don't need to tolerate it in any form or fashion, and it ain't going to destroy itself. And so we need to use whatever leverage we need to use to get white people to destroy their system. Because they need an incentive. So let's see how we can come up with some incentive. Like, we're not going to go out here. We're going to cause you lose probably, what, $100 million? I don't know how much football games on TV generate and add revenue for the university, but guess what? This dude don't resign. You might as well just put that in a negative column, cause we not playing. Black Talk Radio News every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Black Talk Radio Network. We'll kick some message music and then come back, tackle these stories, look at the details of these stories, and look for your phone calls.
They use force on inmates. They beat up inmates. They planted evidence or weapons in cells.
If an inmate was beaten up, presumably, if he made a complaint, there had to be some sort of investigation.
It would be squashed at the management level. It wouldn't go any farther than that. it wouldn't go any farther than probably the supervisor of that yard.
Donald Boddicker is now in hiding. We had to agree his lawyer came to the interview, and we couldn't say where we met them.
Ever since I broke the code of silence, I've lost everything. I've lost friends that I had associated with the Department of Corrections. I've lost some of my family members. I've lost everything. I lost my career. I've lost financially. It's devastating. I'm on the move all the time.
Why?
Because I'm fearful for my life, for my life.
I don't worry. I tell you, I'm a man who believed that I died 20 years ago. And I live like a man who is dead already. I have no fear.
This is Sean Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
I'm the deputy chairman of the state of Illinois Black Panther Party, Fred Hampton. I have the pleasure of not introduce who I believe is one of the baddest motherfuckers in the world. A man that did something that a lot of us ought to be very glad that he did. He was a part of making the only party which exists in the United States today that represents the people. As a matter of fact, he was one hand. Him and Huey P. Newton started out in 1966. Sometimes I think where some of us were in 1966. I think what we would have said if we'd heard about some niggas going out the street talking about carrying the gun, fighting all them police because we didn't know they were seeing out there in the street. And I think I'm speaking for the whole party of the state of Illinois. I know I am. When I say that we love Huey P. Newton, we love Elvin Cleaver, we love Bobby Hutton, we love the Black Panther Party, and we love Chairman Bobby C. We love them because they were the first ones that took a stand against capitalism and racism and said that we'll fight until the end. We said we join the line somewhere, motherfucker. If you try to pass us, we'll blow your brains out. They were the first ones that came through with the program that was initiated for the benefit of the people. All those things that I named, the reasons why we love them are reasons that make it beneficial to us. But let me simply say when I'm introducing Brother Bobby, that we love him because he's lovely to love. Tell me about the people.
All right, we here for some jive conspiracy. You know what we gonna do?
We are going to defend ourselves. Because Huey P. Newton said that power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in a desired manner. Power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in a desired manner. What kind of phenomena? Social phenomena. What is a social phenomena? Black people, Mexican American, any kind of people, begins to learn that the social phenomenon is that, in fact, U.S. racist, decadent, capitalist, imperialist America is a holy state. That a holy state exists here, that these pigs are doing nothing but protecting the average businessman and the demagogic politicians, protecting the exploitative system that they got going. That, in fact, we are tired of it, we are sick of it, you've been brutalizing black people, you've been murdering and lynching them, black people are tired of it. That's the vanguard of the revolution all of a sudden, and it's phenomenally correct also. But we are concerned with that social phenomena. We are concerned with that exploitation. We are concerned with the oppression that black people and all other people in the world who are suffering the same common oppression that we are suffering today. The thing is that we have the ability to define it. Still, if we have the ability to define it, the only next thing to do is get organized. Get organized. So when a pig walks up to you, or a pig gets a job with the people, you'll be so organized, you'll be learning some tactics, you'll be learning some revolutionary principles, you'll be having some guns hit out somewhere, you have some proper tactics. That when the pig gets a job with you, the pig gets wrong, you whoop your guns out on him, blow him away, and then you have the ability, in fact, you have made that pig act in a desired manner.
May appear a confusing blur of activities, each ant doing its own thing, but it can't be. Somehow the ants coordinate their actions so that large insects are overwhelmed, killed, and carried back to the base.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed on this broadcast from behind these enemy lines. And so let's go ahead and just open up, jump into this CNN article about the ISIS bomb Russian plane and the GOP reaction. And I don't know if it's the GOP reaction, but it's Senator Marco Rubio's reaction. And he's privy to some, he got some security clearances and access to some information and some things being talked about that the American public ain't privy to on these committees and in these boardrooms and the corporation headquarters down there at Washington, D.C., also known as USA Inc. So anyway, it's him. You know, that's the only one he's really, well, they're mentioning Jeb Bush, but they ain't really talking about nothing. But Marco Rubio shares a key piece of information. I'm just waiting on CNN to load this video up because I want you to see how mainstream media will cover this instance. And even though a key piece of information is right there in their face, they're not covering it. I think it's playing. Hold up. Okay, that's an ad coming up. So anyway, see if I can unmute this thing. It's all about creating public perception and not giving you the key pieces of information or pointing them out to you so you don't put the big picture together to that ties Hillary Clinton and the Obama administration to the it makes them indirectly responsible. It should come to no surprise that these people is blowing up planes, if indeed that intelligence is good.
CNN's Barbara Starr live for us at the Pentagon. Barbara, you and your team broke the story a short while ago. Tell us what you know.
Well, the CNN has been looking across all government agencies at any signs of what the Obama administration may be thinking about all of this. And we now know that this is not a firm, absolute conclusion, but indeed, based on the intelligence they have, the U.S. now does believe it was most likely a bomb that brought down this plane. I want to read you exactly what one source told, government source told us a short time ago. Quote, there is a definite feeling it was an explosive device planted in luggage or somewhere on the plane. And they do believe the most likely perpetrator, ISIS or an ISIS affiliate. Why do they say this? They are not sharing the intelligence they do have, but we know that they have been monitoring ISIS internal communications, not the public claims of responsibility. That has added to the picture that they have.
Okay, let's stop it there because, again, they are so slick with this and masterful, and they've been at it for hundreds of years. All right, key pieces of information there that she also brought up. She didn't really reveal anything. She did, if you were really paying attention or you know a little bit of background history of the CIA, and the allegations kind of substantiated by either, you can call it circumstantial evidence, but I say that there is hard evidence that connects these the U.S. State Department and the executive branch, and I would even say Congress through the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, because they it's not like I would find it hard to believe that the Obama administration just made up all on his own. I don't know, because they say Bush did this and just decided to talk. No, Bush didn't do that. He sought a resolution, I believe, a resolution of force. But even though, you know, that's still unconstitutional because they're supposed to be a declaration of war. So I don't want to get all into the particulars of how the Iraq war was illegal. But the same thing was done in Libya. So, I mean, when you engage in so-called nation building and you use what? The State Department, you use the CIA, you use all these intelligence organizations to infiltrate these groups. And then oftentimes, like is being alleged about ISIS, is that they're really just Al-Qaeda, which I used to have another name for them, and I called them Al-CIA-da. Then all you can just follow the money, as they always say. Follow the money, follow the drugs. Follow the, that's money too. Follow the money. So that's how they are monitoring, not the public, not the Twitter accounts, not any Facebook pages, not any individuals on social media that's posting videos or got a WordPress site somewhere and, you know, posting beheading videos or going on rants and just saying whatever they're saying, putting out their propaganda. She's saying that they're not getting it from there, but they're internal. They're monitoring the internal communications. That's because they got somebody in the room that's trying to guide these people to carry out a political agenda. But what's really driving the people that they're using, the proxies, is a religious agenda. And they're using each other. What, you going to give me all these weapons and ammo and to take out Assad because you've been wanting to take them out for, you know, however, or, you know, you're going to give me money to overthrow Libya? And this man, this country has been, you know, really doing a lot of harm to Islamic radicals and whatnot. Now, I don't trust you, but I'll take the guns and the ammo. And yeah, we'll take some of your intelligence that you can provide us with where Gaddafi is or where his sons are so we can target him and murder them. And we'll take that assistance, but okay. But you ain't, but see, then the U.S. ain't really in control of them, and that's how U.S. ambassadors and CIA agents and stuff get killed, or private security contract. That's how they get killed. It's because of the proxies that you use, and you ain't really in control of every element. You make deals with the commanders or whatnot, but, you know, you don't give them orders. You make suggestions. It's about understanding the battlefield. So that's key right there, what she's saying, but not for, not in a way you, most people wouldn't pick up on that. That's what she's saying, that whoever her sources are telling her they got a person in the room. So why didn't you warn somebody about this bomb, huh? Why you didn't warn somebody about the bomb? You knew. What's the backstory on that? So let's continue with this corporate propaganda.
This has developed over the last several days, is our understanding from several sources. And we have seen it really come into public view in the last several hours as the British took their steps to stop flights back and forth to Sharm el-Sheikh. Ireland, as you say, following suit, the U.S. Embassy in Cairo issuing its warning. The focus now is, what was the security at the Sharm el-Sheikh airport? A British aviation team traveling to the airport there to look at it. Don't look for those aviation flights to resume until there's some assurance by the European governments that get flights right from that airport that it is safe. The Egyptians say it's safe. There is a lot of concern. What U.S. officials are also telling us, they had no indications before the attack, no pre-warning on any of this, but they had been looking at intelligence about growing militant activity in Sinai over the last several weeks and months. It had been a growing concern by the U.S. as to what was happening in Sinai. And now all of it, they say, adding up to a very strong belief, they do indeed believe it was a bomb that brought down the plane and killed all 224 souls on board. Jake?
All right, we'll stop it there. Now, you weren't able to see the map that they showed, but this airport where they believe the bomb was put on board the plane, the Sinai, that Sinai Desert. What does the Sinai Desert act as? A buffer between Israel and Egypt. And there has also been reports in alternative media of Mossad agents also being spotted on the battlefield directing the Islamist forces of whatever it is they call an ISIS or the Islamic State. But I know who is responsible because Marco Rubio, or we should say, yeah, we're going to say responsible, even whether it's indirectly or not, you should have been foreseen as a CEO, as a commander-in-chief, you should have foreseen that if we overthrow this country and it's going to the secular government in Libya that and help these Islamics, we're just creating another Islamic state. So, you know, the U.S. policy is creating the Islamic state. I mean, damn, you're helping them gain major territory. And then later you want to talk about, oh, they off the chain and we can't control them, if you even acknowledge it at all. So, this is what Rubio said. This is the CNN report. Rubio, a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, called on the United States to expand its military footprint in combating ISIS beyond the Middle East and into North Africa, where ISIS cells are operating with relative impunity in Libya, which is Egypt's neighbor to the west. Rubio called ISIS safe haven, that's in quotations, in Libya as a quote-unquote growing threat that the U.S. needs to begin to take seriously in an interview Wednesday with CNN's Dana Bush. Rubio said, I would be targeting their safe havens everywhere, including Libya, Rubio said. If we don't wipe out their operational status that they now have in Libya, they're going to use it to ramp up more operations in Sinai, more in Egypt, and eventually it will cross over the Mediterranean into Europe itself. Rubio suggested that the apparent attack against a Russian airliner potentially emanated from ISIS cells in Libya. And I would say that irrespective of that, that their threat in Libya has now grown to an almost crisis level that's almost on par of what we see in Iraq. Now, I'll stop there. Bush also had something to say, but we'll stop there. Let's analyze what Rubio said. Really, who is responsible for establishing the entire landmass called Libya into a safe haven for ISIS or Islamic terrorists? Huh? We've seen the reports even from corporate media of them lining up people on their knees on the beaches of Libya, cutting off heads because them people classified themselves as Christian, and I guess they wouldn't convert to Islam. So you cut their heads off. Yeah. Man, I don't like people like that, man. To say the least, you're an enemy of the people. Now, we have these reports. How can Rubio's practicing racism, white supremacy as a proxy, but I think he's of European descent, that using that label Hispanic or Latino, that kind of refers to like a culture, you know, and a language, people who speak a certain dialect or whatever, that's what they have in common, but in terms of their DNA ancestry, no. No, when Rubio people came from Cuba, he's of that DNA stock that was enslaving all them Africans that are the dominant population now on the island of Cuba. So I hesitate to call him a non-white person. So we have to make that distinction. But he's still, you know, practicing white supremacy by saying not even deeming it a crisis. Because right after you helped target Gaddafi and his sons, and just basically you provided air support and all kind of military intelligence, spy satellite intelligence to, you know, hunt him down in the desert, find his caravan and whatnot. I mean, they did this, and then they allowed these rabid dogs, and yes, I call them rabid dogs for a reason, because Arabs are offended by dogs. They get angry. I ain't going to say they offended, but, you know, they get angry. They get angry. They, you know, don't like dogs or whatnot. They're considered filthy animals or whatnot, so that's why I call them rabid dogs. Those Arab rabid dogs we saw. And the Islamists, in the bad negative sense of the word, radicals. We've seen video, there's video on YouTube of them rounding up black people, African people, people who had immigrated from other parts of Africa because Gaddafi's economy was booming. Yeah, his socialism was attracting a lot of people because he was giving a lot of people jobs, as well as in addition to social services and whatnot. And so all the and these Arab dogs resented this influx of black melanated Africans. And so when they got the opportunity as afforded to them by USA Inc., CEO Barack Obama, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, then once they got control of the country, they went on an ethnic cleansing spree. There are reports of this out there on the internet. Russia Today, Al Jazeera, other outlets. You can go watch the videos for yourself of them rounding up black people, executing black people, terrorizing black people, stuffing that Islamic flag down their throats and whatnot. I mean, we talking about tens of thousands, possibly hundreds of thousands. Who knows the final number, because ain't nobody went in there to count yet. It's now just a freaking chaos there now with the Islamic chaos. They just doing whatever the hell they want to do, and you just let them. So it's above crisis level for Africans that still may be trapped behind those enemy lines on that battlefield. But see, long as a bunch of black people is getting killed, then, you know, that's not really that serious. That's how Bill Clinton stood by and let a million Rwandans die, and, you know, by the proxies that they was using to engineer global agendas and policies. But when you see if you can make that connection, though. Now, he's telling you, this man, it's not him really giving you an opinion, but he, you know, he's basing this off of information that he got when the Obama administration and probably Hillary Clinton went and told them, Susan Rice from the UN ambassador, because she was part of the media campaign to tell lies on a bunch of Islamic rabid dogs getting ready to get slaughtered or being slaughtered by Gaddafi. I mean, you see how they acting now. That's why he had to lock them all up and hunt them down for committing acts of terrorism. You know, so he was really fighting a real war against terror. So, I mean, Rubio was on that committee when they went in there and said, you know, we're going to do this. We ain't really asking for your permission, but we just going to let y'all know. Here's the intelligence that we have and all this and that. And cause white supremacists don't like Gaddafi because of, you know, his activity and resisting global white supremacy back in the 70s and the 80s and whatnot, when Reagan murdered one of his children by sending a jet to drop a bomb on his house. War crime. They've hated him. And even though, you know, they knew that he was a good asset to have in North Africa against these Islamic radicals. So the Bush administration cut a deal with him in 2005. He, you know, just kept doing what he was already doing. Biggest mistake was allowing the CIA to have a consulate and a station there. And, you know, but I guess, you know, if you're going to say, all right, we have diplomatic ties now, that's how we're making this deal, I guess I got to let you open up an embassy or whatnot. But they use those embassies and they use those consulates and they use that CIA station to engineer an overthrow of an ally. How is no one in mainstream media not bringing this up whenever they interview any other parties that have direct involvement in it? How are they not asking these questions unless they're part of the cover-up? That's the only logical conclusion that you can come to. Let's go to the phone lines, area code 404. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News. Go ahead with your question, comment.
Greetings to you, Scotty. This is Sarah.
Hello, Sarah. Good to hear from you. I heard you last night on Black Rose talk on the Lotus Place talking about those black athletes and students showing black self-respect in the face of racist terrorism. And I appreciate it, you know, the comments that y'all were sharing. And you're right. You were right from last night in saying that, you know, if you're going to blame students for not standing up to racism and white supremacy and allowing themselves to be used without showing any dignity whatsoever, then you have to point at the parents. And so somebody, you know, I guess we could give credit to the parents, or maybe these kids, you know, just said, hey, this ain't logical, this ain't right, and, you know, nobody else gonna take a stand. We got all the Black Lives Matter people taking a stand in the street, so we gonna take a stand. We ain't playing football on Sunday unless this man go. So I appreciate your commentary, but what did you want to call in and share with us?
Well, thanks for the compliment, Scotty, on that. And we of course we have to blame the parents, because these children don't drop out of the into the world as adults. They have to come up from small, and parents have to instill values into them. And I did the same thing with my children when they were coming along with their athleticism, to let them know that no one was going to exploit them and use them for whatever and then leave them high and dry, and to stand up for themselves. So I'm glad that these young men, they stood their ground, and we know that the school was not going to say that fine, that they were going to have to pay that $1 million fine if they forfeit the game against Brigham Young. So money talks, and they, the president, you know, they went ahead and they gave him that golden parachute and pushed him on out the door. So that's a good thing for those students. But what I called in about to talk about, Scotty, was a couple things that your show with Dr. Welsing that was on there. And I have to commend you again to say that you really show restraint in your conversation with the elder, and your question was not answered. And I respect Dr. Welsing, and I the work that she has done, nearly fuller, and everything that he has done, that they have put forth in order to get us on track, to let us know what we're up against, the system of racism, white supremacy. But we have got to, with these elders, they can only push the project so far. And we need to pick it up from there and move it forward. And everyone is subject to be critiqued in a respectful manner, myself included. There's no sacred cows allowed. We are all allowed to critique each other where we make mistakes. And Dr. Welsing, keeps getting stuck. And one of the things that irritates me with her when she comes on and she makes her critiquing about white supremacy, and they always like to throw in this false analysis about the Jews in Germany, in Europe, and with Hitler, and why he got rid of them, stating because they were not white enough. That's a very false analysis. It was not true. I know Dr. Welsing said she went to Europe back into the 50s, right after World War II ended, and she spoke with some of the Germans who were there. Then we need to go and talk for more recent events, from when people were in Europe, and more recently than back in the 50s, and to see what was there. Hitler did not, and as you correctly put it, it was not only the Jews who were exterminated. They were Christians. They were so-called mixed-race blacks. There were gypsies. There were lots of other people, Catholics, homosexuals, et cetera. Those were all exterminated, a part of the process of being undesirable. But to get back to the Jewish question she always brings up and saying why with Hitler exterminating them, no, he did not exterminate them because of that. What she needs to read, and what a lot of people need to read, there is a book out called The Transfer Agreement. And that book specifically stated what happened with the Jews. There were a war going on between the Orthodox and the Reformed Jews. They wanted to get a land, a homeland for themselves. And they decided to sacrifice a lot of Jews, because if you look through in Hitler's cabinet with the SS and the stormtroopers, as well as his scientists that he had Jews that worked for him at the very top level of the Nazi government. He got rid of this, the Zionists, some of the Zionists, because of the destruction they did to the economy, the stranglehold that they put on the
bankers,
German economy.
The bankers and the merchants and, you know, the same thing what we saw happen with the crash of the U.S. economy.
Now, that the same thing that we're experiencing right now is what Germany was going through, because you have a tiny minority of people that had a stranglehold on the finances and were ruining the economy, and that is what he got rid of. It has nothing to do with their with what religion they were practicing or anything like that. It has to do with their destructive nature of the economy. And if we go back also to the Bolshevik revolution in Russia, it's the same thing that happened in Russia with those Jews, because it was the same thing, the Zionist faction that had a stranglehold on the economy. And that is why in every country in Europe where they were pushed out of and they were rushed out, it's because of their mangling of those people's economy is the reason why they were put out. It had nothing to do with any religion. And Dr. Welsing has gotten it wrong, and she keeps repeating that over and over again, and it's totally incorrect. And as you said, with being a Semite, Semite has nothing to do with it. And people always make this comparison with blacks and with Jews. And there's no comparison. Those are European whites. They are white people. They are not black. We don't need to say, okay, that we are in a similar situation, because we are not. We have never been white people. What we came through, we have never been in, they have never went through chattel slavery. So why it is that we always allow ourselves to be put in a comparative analysis with similar circumstances as the Jews? Because it's not even close. And the situation that you spoke on with the Russian situation with the airlines, Barbara Starr, the reporter that you played that worked for one of these three-letter alphabet agencies, she's a Zionist propaganda tool. And nothing that comes out of her mouth, you cannot take her Wolf Blitzer. They are tools that work for the Zionists, and they work and they bring out talking points, because they are liars. They knew exactly what was going, because as a matter of fact, Scotty, he went back a few weeks ago when that Master Sergeant was killed somewhere in Iraq, when they said he went into they went into some mission and he was killed, and they were making a big hoopla with him being a hero and all of that.
Yes.
The president did not authorize that raid. That raid was done by Ashton Carter. He is the one who went over the president. As you can see, this so-called African-American in the White House, he doesn't control anything.
That's why I said Hillary is in charge, just to add this quick point. That's why I tend to lay Libya, the decision to invade, overthrow, and turn it over to terrorists, I lay that on Hillary Clinton, because it seemed like, you know, Obama just hands off, let her do whatever she wants to do at the Secretary of State, mm-hmm. which also has close relationships, as we learned from the Cheney Bush years. You know, with Valerie Plame, a CIA agent, being married to a State Department employee. So they're all interconnected. And so I lay the overthrow of Libya and connecting the dots and saying what Hillary Clinton's decisions in Libya have led to the bombing of this Russian jetliner, because of what you said. But Obama ain't really in charge. He makes some suggestions, but there are more powerful, refined white supremacists running the show, regardless of what title they got.
You're correct in that, Scotty, because Ashton Carter and them, because you have seen ever since, you know, he came out there and he made that decision, because when that John Kirby from the State Department, when he was asked questions about it, as well as Josh Earnest, who's the White House spokesperson, they made a slip up on saying that the president was not informed of that they were going to be this raid. And they said it at a news conference. I remember distinctly, I watched and I listened to that news conference. And I said it's to be expected, because they have a separate shadow government, which is a permanent and real government that operates out of Washington, D.C., that is not elected. They're always in power regardless of who is in office. They're the ones who are making the decision as far as what foreign policy is going to be. And they were the ones who decided to make this move, within which, because Russia came in there and they were cleaning up. They cleaned up within 1 week what the United States was pretending to do in over 2 years in Syria with these so-called rebels and terrorists and whatever. They cleaned up house. And after all of that started happening, then they started lying and saying, oh, the Russian was bombing and killing innocent Syrians and doing all of this. Start distorting it in the media.
Or moderates, calling them moderates. Yeah, they moderately stood by while their cousins went out there and cut people's heads off and eating hearts and stuff like that. You see that? Remember that? Where the one cut the Syrian soldier's heart out and ate it? Yeah, moderates.
Yeah, I remember all of that. So they were lying on the Russians because they had to show, but Vladimir Putin, and one thing that he was doing, he had the drone aircraft that was filming everything, all of the action that they were doing on the ground. He filmed it, and he had a record of everything that they have done to show exactly the coordinates. They know who they hit, on what target they hit, so that they can back it up to show that these lies that the American press is coming out with to blame the Russians, it never happened like that. They did not do that. And you're correct, because when now all of a sudden this ISIS, whatever the heck, you know, our CIA that came out and saying that they shot down, taking claim for shooting down this plane. Now, this plane was traveling at 31,000 feet above ground. That's a little over 5 miles above ground. I don't know if ISIS have any SAW weapons, which is a surface-to-air weapon that can go that far into the sky and take out a Russian plane. So it had to come either from Saudi Arabia or from Israel, who shot down that plane, and all of a sudden they can say ISIS did it, because that's a 5 mile reach for that weapon to go all the way up to that sky to bring down that plane. So it's not ISIS who did it, but they're going to say no. Put whatever their faction is to say ISIS taking claim.
Like I said, it could have been Mossad.
It is Mossad done, because as you said, the Sinai is right on the border between Egypt and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget, Saudi Arabia and Israel, they're in bed together. They have all of these weaponry that the U.S. has given to them to be their proxy within which to keep this killing going on over there in the so-called North Africa, Middle East, as they want to call it. So they shot down that plane as a warning to Russia to say, okay, y'all messing in our business, and you had no business to come in here and do this because we told you to stay out of it. So now they're coming after the Russians by killing those 220-something innocent people. They went and they shot them down as a warning to Vladimir Putin. But we're going to see this stuff is going to be stepped up even further than that, because this is what you call real terrorism. This is what these Europeans call real, that's what they're doing, experience real terrorism, because as you said, with the chaos that they created when they removed Gaddafi from there, because Gaddafi was acting as the gatekeeper, because Libya was the gate that blocked all of the flow of immigrants from running through
into
Libya,
Europe,
to cross into the Mediterranean to get into Europe. He was blocking that.
He was also giving them jobs too, though.
They didn't have no reason, because they were getting well-paid jobs and they were well taken care of.
Yeah.
And another thing that they're not showing is that we're all focusing on all of these so-called Arab-looking, you know, the white-looking Arabs who are making this dash into Europe in order to escape. But what they're not showing is these blacks, the black African that's coming from Somalia, Yemen, Nigeria, that were in
Sudan.
Libya, that are also escaping. They're not showing that when these black Africans are making escape on the boat, these so-called white Arabs are pushing them out, and they don't want them to be a part when they to escape also into Europe. They are pushing them out of the boat.
Wow. Which benefits.
Because they're showing you in Italy and all of these camps in Italy where they're having these fights and these things between the black and the so-called white Arabs. And so all of these black people like to talk about their solidarity and Islam and all these Assalamu Alaikums and all them like to run around here and, you know, and say that, you know, we Muslim and we this and that. No, you black first and then whatever religion you want to follow second, because these people, they don't look at you, they don't treat you as a human being. They treat you nothing like, they treat you nothing as the Arab word for niggas is abid.
And pit you against one another, and use those. Yeah, I mean, I'm like you. Whatever your personal choice in religion or spirituality, I'm not trying to clash with you on that. As long as you black first, and if you black first, then you ain't gonna allow yourself to be siding with some Islamic radicals that want to implement Sharia law or do any other kind of crazy mess, or you ain't going to be no right-wing Christian Zionist, black Christian Zionist sitting up there supporting Israel.
I agree with you on that, Scotty, because like I've always told you, I went to Saudi Arabia twice, and I can tell you that people always like to talk about there's no racism and they don't practice it. Those people are just as rabid. They see black
That's where
people
I was stationed, Sister Sarah. That's where I was stationed during the Gulf War, 6 months.
You were stationed there, and I went there at the time when I went there because my husband was working over there, and I went there with him when he was on a job assignment, and I also went there because of religious reason when I was practicing as a Muslim and I was practicing Islam, and I can tell you that I've seen the way how they treat those people, especially those Africans coming from Africa, because don't forget this last Hajj that they make, and they had that stampede, who they blamed it on? They blame it on the Africans. Saying that they don't know how to conduct themselves, they don't know how to march, and therefore they're the ones who caused the stampede. It's a few, like when everything goes wrong, find a black person and put the blame on it. They're
global
very
system.
Well from their European person.
That's why Neely Fuller said it's a global system, same pattern in practice. Blame a black person.
And that's what they've consistently done. They treat the blacks over there as though you are animals. And that's the same thing that they have done. So people who want to run around here and want to pretend, oh, well, we're all in one, this big brotherhood, and we all that. No, you're not. I've always been black first. Everything else comes second. I don't take nothing come over my blackness, because whenever you see me there, you see I'm black and you see I'm female. And they have zero respect for both. They have no respect for women, and they have no respect for being black. And like I always tell people, everybody who come on this planet, you came by way of a woman.
Well,
that's all you got here.
Well, Sarah, I want to take a station identification break, but I want you to hang on the line, because that kind of is
a
perfect segue for me to segue into this propaganda video about the labels. I wasn't born black. I wasn't born white and all this and that. And it's just pure propaganda, anti-blackness propaganda. And it was shared by the local NAACP Gaston County chapter. Now, he's putting this out at the same time that the Oklahoma NAACP is calling them white supremacists out because ain't no black people on the jury. And here this Gaston County representative want to eliminate, you know, well, let's just all be Americans or something. So I'm going to let you hear this along with the other people. And, you know, because this is just a lot of foolishness going on, and we have to be clear about these things. All right. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. This is Scotty Reed broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. We're going to take a station identification break. Also, Tando Radio Show is coming up at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, he plans to talk about what is the heading of some major war moves being made and people need to be prepared. The title is something along those lines, and he has a couple of clips that he wants me to share. But don't, as I reminded him last week, a person who sounded like they were white, so we don't know them, so we have to call them a racist suspect until we can confirm that they are just white people and they're not practicing white supremacy and whatnot. But he claimed to represent a militia, be a part of the militia movement that is happening across America. You hear a little bit from mainstream media about, you know, they usually portray it as white people running around in the woods with guns and playing war games and whatnot, which I think is smart activity, and black people should be engaged in that. And some black people that I have seen and that you have not seen are planning those kind of war maneuvers. So anyway, he's due to call back today because we had plenty of questions, like the question I asked about their affiliation to the Oath Keepers, who have shown themselves to be racist white supremacists through speeches that one of them gave, the fact that they wouldn't even respond to my emails when I want to ask them, you know, how can you be putting out public statements against the protest in Ferguson when you claim to be an Oath Keeper? What's that oath keep that you're supposed to keep? You know, something about the Constitution and all of that. And and liberty and justice for all, and in the face of clear injustice, you coming out on side of the oppressor, the one that's violating people's constitutional rights? Well, why are you doing it? Because those people are black. It's a simple answer. Simple answer. You can play the verbal gymnastics and whatnot and say that Michael Brown deserved to get killed, or those black people should have paid all of those fines, and then they wouldn't have been put in jail and held, you know, there until somebody came up with some money with the fines increasing and all of that, and robbing people about $1 million annually, something I think the city was making off of it. So, you know, when you say that, you know, you out there with them people, man, I ain't trying to be down with you. So just, you got to ask questions. Got to ask these people questions. So we'll see if they call back in today. All right. We'll be right back on the other side. Y'all stay tuned. Searching for the best in online black radio, then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Johnson, he can always raise an argument about law and order because he never talks about justice. But black people fall for that same argument, and they go around talking about lawbreakers. We did not make the laws in this country. We are neither morally nor legally confined to those laws. Those laws that keep them up keep us down. You got to begin to understand that. For 400 years, he taught you white nationalism, and you lapped it up. You taught it to your children. You had your children thinking that everything black was bad. Black cows don't give good milk. Black hens don't lay eggs. Black for funerals, white for weddings. That's white nationalism. Santa Claus. A white honky who slides down a black chimney and comes out white. We tend to equate progress with concessions. We can no longer make that mistake. You see, when they gave us that nigger astronaut, you said we were making progress, but I told you they were going to lose him in space. He didn't get that far. You put Adam Clayton Powell in office and you couldn't keep him. What you think they're going to do with Thurgood Marshall when they get tired of him?
Turn him into a proxy racist.
They gave him Washington to D.C. and you said we were making progress. That's not progress. See, it's no in between. You're either free or you're a slave. There's no such thing as second-class citizenship. That's like telling me you can be a little bit pregnant.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. So 7 days ago, exactly 7 days ago, on November the 2nd, a person by the name of Prince EA, I don't even know how to pronounce that name. It's just EA, like in EA Sports or something. But Prince EA, maybe it's a pseudonym or something. He posted a video that has been seen over 21 million and a half times on Facebook. And all he writes as the title of his video is, "I am not black, you are not white. These labels were made up to divide us." And so, you know, you would have to take it way back to Bacon's Rebellion, and you have to listen to, what's that lecture, let me pull up this information right quick, how white people how the white, the invention of the white racist, the name of that book. We sometimes play the lecture that was given on that book on this station when we're not on air. The invention of the white race. Okay, there it go. Come on and show me the author. We don't want to see Jeffrey B. Perry, I think, is the author. No, Theodore W. Allen, who I believe is a black man. Yeah, I think he is. And this work, you find it on Google Books. Of course, you can find it on Amazon. But I also recommend a two-hour lecture on YouTube, The Invention of the White Race. So, I mean, you have to be connecting it way back to, you know, the 15th century when white people were enslaved and black people were enslaved and Indians were, everybody was enslaved based on, you know, the real refined white supremacists coming out of England. All right, the English, and you could even say the Spanish. So they were the major powers. They were oppressing the Irish, the Scots, and everybody else. But see, those people were known as Irish, Scots, and all of that before they were known as being white. And the reason that they became white is because they're in Bacon's Rebellion. There was a rebellion of everybody. Everybody that was being mistreated, everybody that was being enslaved. And so the white supremacists, we would call them Anglo-Saxons during that period, that came from Europe, that was making all the money and you know, the so-called royalty and all of that. They made a deal with the Irish and the other ones and said, look, we'll make y'all the slave patrollers and the plantation overseers. We'll give you jobs and stuff, and we'll just practice white supremacy and slavery against the black ones. And that's when the labels were created, because then, back then, everybody knew where they was from. Either you was from Angola, I mean, you know, cause a bunch of free African settlements on this continent. So, you know. But that's now the black people have embraced that term and call it, you know, use it to describe themselves as allegiance to a society, a culture, a community that has common suffering and oppression, a common enemy, the white supremacists. You know, now you want to say, oh, something wrong with us, that we're causing all the oppression by calling us black. So our local NAACP Gaston County chapter president thought it would be nice during the time when you got, I don't know if he's a non-white cop, he's mixed race, but he functioning as white, Daniel Holzclaw, the former Oklahoma police officer who, while he was on duty as a slave catcher, was out there raping the black women that he was coming encounter with, just as if a slave patroller back in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, and they came across either a free African woman, you know, on the street, or a free African child, or even a free African boy, you know, because they're homosexuals too, they rape men too, you know what I'm saying? Or if they were enslaved and had escaped. But before you take her back to the plantation, I'm gonna have my perverse sick sexual ways with her. You know, I'm going to rape her. So while this we're facing this in modern times, there's a trial right now in Oklahoma where these black women was raped by a slave catcher, a modern slave catcher. We got the NAACP, and the NAACP there is saying, hey, y'all done put together all white jury, that ain't right. We need black people on that jury. We need more non-white people on that jury. But then you're over here across the country in North Carolina talking about, let's get rid of these labels. You co-signing on to some nonsense that was probably funded and produced by white people, but giving black people, but showcasing black people prominently in this propaganda. So I'm going to let y'all listen to it. Here it go.
I am not black. I mean, that's what the world calls me, but it's not me. I didn't come out of my mother's womb saying, hey, everybody, I'm black. No, I was taught to be black. And you were taught to call me that, along with whatever you call yourself. It's just a label. See, from birth, the world force feeds us these labels. And eventually, we all swallow them. We digest and accept the labels, never, ever doubting them. But there's one problem. Labels are not you, and labels are not me. Labels are just labels. But who we truly are is not skin deep. See, when I drive my car, no one would ever confuse the car for me. Well, when I drive my body, why do you confuse me for my body? It's my body. Get it? Not me. Let me break it down. See, our bodies are just cars that we operate and drive around. The dealership we call society decided to label mine the Black Edition, yours the Irish or White Edition. And with no money down, 0% APR, and no test drive, we were forced to own these cars for the rest of our lives. Forgive me, but I fail to see the logic or pride in defining myself or judging another by the cars we drive. Because who we truly are is found inside. Listen, I'm not here to tell you how science has concluded that genetically we're all mixed and race in the human species doesn't exist, or how every historian knows that race was invented in the 15th century to divide people from each other and it has worked perfectly. No, I'm not here to lecture. I just want to ask one question. Who would you be if the world never gave you a label? Never gave you a box to check? Would you be white? Black, Mexican, Asian, Native American, Middle Eastern, Indian? No. We would be one. We would be together. No longer living in the era of calling human beings black people or white people. These labels that will forever blind us from seeing a person for who they are, but instead seeing them through the judgmental, prejudicial, artificial filters of who we think they are. And when you let an artificial label define yourself, then, my friend, you have chosen smallness over greatness and minimized yourself, confined and divided yourself from others. And it is an undeniable fact that where there is division, there will be conflict, and conflict starts wars. Therefore, every war has started over labels. It's always us versus them. So the answer to war, racism, sexism, and every other ism is so simple that every politician has missed it. It's the labels. We must rip them off. Isn't it funny how no baby is born racist, yet every baby cries when they hear the cries of another, no matter the gender, culture, or color, proving that deep down we were meant to connect and care for each other. That is our mission, and that is not my opinion, that is the truth. In a world that has sold us fiction, please listen, labels only distort our vision, which is why half of those watching this will dismiss it or feel resistance and conflicted, but just remember, so did the caterpillar before it broke through its shell and became the magnificent butterfly.
Okay, I can't share any more of that. I don't know what y'all interpretation is, but my interpretation is anti-blackness. I mean, and it's simplistic and it's childish. It's suggesting that black people are childish for calling themselves black, or, you know, not really focusing on white people. You know, why they call themselves white. You know, ask those questions and whatnot. So, you know, black people aren't doing anything any different than the majority of them. And we didn't come up with the labels, but you have labels so you can identify stuff. And you can say we all belong to the human family and all this and that, but, you know, you have different species just like in other species. And, you know, all cats ain't lions, and you know, obviously you got leopards, and you even got other felines, mountain lions here in you know, North America. You got cougars, you got pumas, but they cats, they are the same species, but you got different labels so you can identify the different species, and thus human beings do the same thing, whether it's those religious labels to identify themselves of what their spiritual beliefs are, or whether it's their political, your Democrat, Republican, whatever, Libertarian, whatever, Green Party. So, you know, it's like China is targeting black people. And because I believe it is being produced by refined white supremacists and whatnot, and being promoted and whatnot, because you can pay to boost posts. How do we know white people didn't pay to boost these posts? You know, maybe not. I don't think so, because it would say promoted. But 21 million, mostly white people, circulated this, you know. But it's directed at black people. Something wrong with you because you black. Why are you out here yelling Black Lives Matter? See, refined white supremacists is slick. And I think this is an attack on black. This is probably from the same people that's behind the campaign talking about all lives matter or police lives matter or something like this is an attack on black lives matter or black people showing the utmost black self-respect. Because, I mean, the words are important that he wrote there. If I don't even look at the video, the title said, I am not black. I am not white. These labels were made up. But you didn't go down the history of how the labels came about. You just attacked the people for using the labels, which back during that time they were called became Negroes, which is Spanish for black. But black, I don't think black people really knew that. Maybe they did when they chose black in the 1960s. You know, I mean, hell, even MLK said, I'm black and I'm proud, didn't he? I believe he did. Matter of fact, I'm certain he did. Let's listen.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. So, I mean, I know Martin Luther King wasn't in the NAACP, but he worked with them and whatnot. And you're calling yourselves the National Association of the Colored People. Ain't that a label? I know black people don't call themselves colored or anything like that, but still labels. So, I don't know. Maybe people got a different perspective than me. So Sarah, what do you think about this?
Well, Scotty, that was very nauseating for me. I had to kind of take it off and just kind of turn away from it for a while. Because
me
it shows
too.
You the misguidance of parents who are raising these children. As my parents always said to me when they were pregnant, they know my father is black, my mother is a black woman. And they said there was one thing, they didn't know the sex of the children, but they know they were having black children. So for you to come out and say that, no, that you, when you were born, you didn't choose a color. First of all, the people, when we were brought over here, we came from different ethnic tribes on Africa, whether you be Ashanti, Yoruba, Igbo, Akan, or whatever tribe you came from. You identified by your tribe first before anything else, because tribe stretches across all regions, all boundaries, and that is artificial.
Like the Gullah Geechee do today.
Yeah, not all these artificial boundaries that the Europeans carved up when they decided to do the Berlin Conference to put up these borders for these different nations. Everybody identified by their ethnic tribe. So for you to, we over here that came through the slave passage and lost all of that identity because of white supremacy, and these same people call themselves white, Irish, Scots, whatever, they're the ones who destroy these boundaries that we had, these tribal connections. So therefore, we're all a bunch of mixed up people that don't know our identity. So we have to identify with being African and black, because we have to claim the entire continent because of our law. So for you to sit up here and to make these idiotic statements as played in this video, to say that you're no label and there's no such thing, this is all well and good for us to think in this metaphysical realm, to say this is an ideal situation we'd like to happen once white supremacy is gone. But for right now, in our reality, you're being seen, when you get stopped by that cop, they're seen as a black male driving this car. So you can talk all this foolishness about your blackness is like a vehicle and all this kind of stupidness, but don't even make no sense. People are getting shot down driving in a car, black men in particular, and they're getting stopped and shot at because they're black and they're male. So I don't know what the heck is he's talking about. He makes no sense. That's the foolishness that we're talking about, because Glenn Ford and Black Agenda 2 weeks ago, he was talking to these ministers from St. Louis. I believe they're called Reverend Anthony Evans from St. Louis, and who was talking about the black church alliances that they have, and they were talking about the burning of the black churches. Mm-hmm. The question came up about security and protection. This man is still running with, well, we practice nonviolence and we are against guns and all of that, and you know, and disarming ourselves and all of that. Now I'm saying to myself, you know, good God Almighty, for choice of a better word, your churches are being burned. People are coming to your churches and gunning down your members and killing us, just as they did in the past when they were killing and lynching black people in these churches. And in 2015, black people are still talking about being nonviolent, not having weapons, not wanting to protect themselves, thinking that the Bible and calling on white Jesus is supposed to save them. This is the condition that we are in that produced this young man in this video that's spewing this nonsense. Listening to people like that, because that is what's going to get you behind heels. You're running around here thinking that you're going to call up Jesus and a Bible and it's supposed to save you.
Right. And then you got young people like in Missouri right now telling you how they being terrorized by white people because they're black. You know, so whether or not you call yourself a Moor, whether you call yourself, you know, whatever, I'm a black Cherokee or I'm this or that. You know, when white people, when white cops come across, and even black cops, you know, because they know that, you know, ain't nobody going to ask too many questions if they kill a black person. But if I kill a white person, man, I might be on trial like that dude down there in Texas, you know, with a quickness and whatnot. But the system, like I told the NAACP guy, I sent him, you know, the links to the article, but here in North Carolina, we already tried to address racial bias in jury selection through a law. But once the, you know, redneck Republicans got in there, conservatives, Confederates got in there, they gutted it or they repealed it, you know. And so now, you know, we see the impact that they're looking at us like we're black. That's how they're excluding us. So it ain't because we calling ourselves black that they're excluding us. They're excluding us because of what we look like. So, I mean, I just look at it as more victim, refined way of victim blaming. And I wouldn't be surprised if he might have got some money from somebody like George Soros or some other liberal think tank. And, you know, hey, we got this ideal and we want you to write a poem and we'll, you know, give you a $25,000 grant if you write a poem and produce a video. You know what I'm saying? That's how they be putting propaganda media into our sphere and making us think it's coming from us, like a BET ain't owned by black people, or you know what I'm talking about, Sarah.
I do agree with it, which brings me right back, Scotty, with one thing that Dr. Welsing always liked to say about we are the parents, we are the parent people of all of these people on the planet. And this is another thing that has not been proven. We know black people are the oldest people on this planet. We don't know about any other group of people on this planet. And for us consistently putting ourselves in the parent role or making ourselves responsible for everybody else on this planet is why we are being abused and we are treated in this fratricidal way by everybody else on this planet. Because we keep thinking that we are responsible for them, that they are our children, and we need to get them under control. And, you know, Dr. Wilson always said, well, these are our children, and we need to control them. No, they're not our children.
That's putting the responsibility on the victim. That's putting the responsibility on the victim, just like they're trying to say. You know, in Missouri, it's your responsibility not to be offended when people use feces to write, you know, swastikas on the wall and otherwise terrorize you. You know, I'm not responsible for their behavior. I see what you're saying. Yeah. But that's in contrast. Yeah, that's crazy. You can't control a white supremacist.
It's crazy. Yeah. So we cannot keep saying that, you know, the minute you start taking on you're human if you display humanity. And
right.
So far, these people have not displayed any sort of humanity to classify them as being part of the human family. And so we've got to stop taking responsibility to think that we give birth to them, because as long as you're running around there believing that you are the parents and why you get your behind whooped by these so-called children of yours, you're going to stay stuck where you are. I'm not claiming that for my children. I know I give birth to two. And they're black. So I ain't go with nobody else.
Hey, I got another call, but thanks for chiming in, Sarah.
Scotty.
All right. We have about 4 minutes. If we need to, we could go a little bit over, about a minute or so. So area code 650, go ahead and spit your comments before, we move on to, Tando Radio Show. And if you could turn your radio down in the background or whatever it is it's playing. All right. Please go ahead with your question or comment.
How you doing, Scotty?
I'm surviving behind the enemy lines.
No, I'm just saying, on your birth certificate, don't it say you black?
Yeah, that's what it say on my birth certificate. Yes, it do.
That's what my mama said.
Like Sarah just said, that's who my mama said she gave birth to. So,
right. That's it, Scotty. I ain't had too much, man.
Okay. Good. Great observation. Great. What did that birth certificate say? Good point. So, I didn't really get to, so I'm going to write the article tonight since I have more time. I'm still going through these reports to tabulate the listener's statistical information for the station for the month of October. But I already started on this article. I know I put today out, and I talked about it a little, about the proxy racism and how Hillary Clinton is using primarily John Lewis, but she using other black politicians and political operatives to get black people to vote for her when she has a resume in terms of policies and treatment of black people that, man, you know, we should just be throwing her application in the trash. Not me escorting her around, endorsing her, and I'm questioning now if you are qualified to be in a leadership position. So I got to write an article. I already started, but I'm going to have to refine it. And I'm going to put it out there about John Lewis and people like John Lewis in their role in the system of racism and white supremacy as a weapon against us. We have to ask logical questions now, and it ain't logical for any person saying they represent or they got the best interests of black people in mind to be endorsing and let alone escorting and recruiting black voters to Hillary Clinton's campaign when this woman has done so much damage to black people in the people activity area of politics. That ain't logical. So how do you make logic out of John Lewis actions or any other black person that is acting as her emissary to the black community or her spokesperson and making and hooking her up in meetings with the parents of dead black children. When she stood in Ferguson Church and said all lives matter, like she didn't get that Black Lives Matter and what it was saying about systemic terrorism, institutional terrorism against black people. So again, you know, no, there are no sacred cows. This ain't me trying to be childish or engage in name calling or nothing like that. It's trying to understand an aspect of the global system of white supremacy, the enemy's tactics that he is using against us, that is working. And so how do we combat that? How do we count? How do we provide countermeasures to that? So, yeah, I will put that article out. It'll be on proxyracism.com. John Lewis will be a Butter Biscuit nominee for the month of November. Last week of November, we will pick, you know, take the poll and determine who did the most damage or provided the most aid, whose behavior, I should say, provided the most aid to the system of racism and white supremacy and harming black people. Was it this NAACP chapter president here in Gaston County? Was it the person who made that poem and video, who is it? Who is it? Is it John Lewis for introducing the monster known as Hillary Clinton, the killer of black people, to parents of the murdered? Come on, man. Hillary Clinton ain't taking no strong stand against police terrorism or 21st century slavery and human trafficking. All right. So recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines. There's a battlefield out there. Casualties are being created every day. You need to have battlefield awareness, develop codification, battlefield skills so that you can decrease the likelihood that you will become a victim, whether that is a victim of police violence and murder or whether that you become a new slave for the modern plantation. All right. We don't want that to happen to anyone, but there are no guarantees. So, you know, you got to take responsibility to develop the skills and not just to survive, but I'm in it to win it. I'm trying to come up with the master plan, the battlefield plans, working with the generals and colonels and whatever, and we putting together the pieces to the puzzle so that we can fight that final battle and end this global war of white supremacy and racism against all non-white life on the planet, because it really is that serious. It is a global war, and they're targeting more than just black people. We just catching the most hell, it seems. At least we know, at least we have the documentation to show we catching the most hell. That's the best way to put it. We have statistical data. We have it all. We can show you all of it. So, Tando Radio Show coming on. I'm just trying to transition to his program. Pull up his playlist. And interesting program. They'll be talking about battlefield awareness today. So, you should stay tuned. They are on air for the next 2 hours discussing those related things. So, come on and make sure that you invite a friend. I'm sorry, things is running kind of slow here, but we'll have them straight. Yeah, we'll have them straight. So stay tuned for Tando Radio Show coming up.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.